verse 29, which is Chintamani Dham, and what's there? Kapavrikshas, Kamadenus, Chintamani. So what's the difference between a Sparshamani and a Chintamani? Because Sparsha, especially if you know Hindi, Sparsha means touch. And money means something you don't have. But you'd like to have. So Sparsha, so money means, money in this case means jewel. Jewel or gem. Or sometimes, you know, stone, like a gemstone. So a touch stone is Sparshamani, and a mind gem, a mind gem is Chintamani. So the spiritual world is made of Chintamani. Anyway, that was just something to do something on the blackboard. But some more about Kapavrikshas, just to repeat a little bit. That Goloka Vrindavan is full of Kapavriksha trees, which will give you whatever you want. But the gopis, they only take flowers from these trees in order to make garlands for Shamsundar and to decorate their heads with flowers. Although they are unlimitedly powerful, the gopis approach and utilize these Kapavriksha trees for this use and no other use. They only serve as beautiful scenery for the gardens and kunjas of Braj. They have no other use. And now we talk about Chintamani. Chintamani Prakara Sadmashu. So Chintamani means you can think and pray to that tree, or Chinta, and it will give whatever you think. Chintamani is not just a stone. Everything in Vrindavan is Chintamani. Krishna is Chintamani, Radha is Chintamani, the gopis and cows are also Chintamani, a stick and everything in Vrindavan is Chintamani. So there is no work for Chintamani. Don't confuse Chintamani with Sparshamani, which means touchstone. Sparshamani will not fulfill all desires. Its function is limited and its use is limited. A Sparshamani will do only one thing. What will a Sparshamani do? If it touches iron, it will turn iron into gold. But a Chintamani is a tree or the land or the gopis or the devotees. They can fulfill any desire and give whatever you want. Gold or jewels or clothing or garlands or saris or anything one wants. Sometimes people get confused because sometimes Chintamani is translated touchstone. And that's part of the confusion. Sparshamani will not fulfill all desires. It's limited in function and use. It only does one thing. You touch iron to gold and it will turn iron to gold. It's also called a philosopher's stone. It's not that if you touch it to a stick or other things like earth or even iron, which is coated with mud, it can't be changed. If you have a piece of iron and it's all, you know, you stick it in the mud and you cover it with mud, if you touch a Sparshamani to it, it won't turn that iron into gold because it's covered with mud. So it has to be contact, Sparsha. That Sparshamani has to touch iron and it'll make gold. Remember Sanatana Goswami, the story of Sanatana Goswami? You know that story? He had a touchstone. So he had a touchstone, and then some dacoit heard about it, and he went to Dwarasaditya Tila, and he approached Sanatana Gosai, and he said, "Hey, Baba, I heard that you had a Sparshamani, that whatever it touches, if it touched iron, it make gold, any unlimited number amount of gold. I want to have that thing." So he says, "Sure, no problem. It's over there underneath that pile of garbage, under those leaves and all that stuff." So the guy went over there and he got it. He went home and he's making some gold and whatnot. And then he was thinking, what is this? Baba is so detached. The whole world is mad after gold, every man and woman, and everybody's mad to get this gold, wear it and possess it and utilize it. But this Baba throws it in a trash heap. He has something better than that. So then he went back and he said, "Baba, You know, this touchstone, this philosopher's stone, sparsha money, you threw it in the trash. Do you have something better than that? And he says, oh yes, sparsha money is nothing. I have chintamani. Oh? What is that chintamani? He said, that chintamani, it is described throughout the Vedic literatures, throughout the Upanishads and the Puranas, and it's described in the Mahabharata, and it's described all over the different Shastras, and all the Rishis that have the Siddha Mahatmas, they had experience of this chintamani. And that's called Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Nityam Mukta Purna Shuddha Vinatvam Namano Amano. Nama Chintamani, Chintamani Nam, this name of Krishna is Chintamani. It is more than touchstone. That whoever it touches, not only does it turn a black steel-like heart, which is full of the blackened, charred desires of kaam, it will turn any black heart into pure gold, into ujwala prem. It has the capacity to transform a black heart into a beautiful, molten, golden heart of ujwala. Ujwala prem, madhurya prem, shringhara ras. And so that has all the qualifications of a touchstone, and more so, because it touches hearts. And moreover, it's also it's chintamani, because it fulfills all desires. Think of everything and anything you want. And then the dacoit, he said, oh, well then give me that chintamani nam. And he said, all right, sit down. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, like that. And so he got the chintamani nam. And then he started chanting, and then he went home, and then he took that sparsha money and he gave it to Food for Life. Because he said, I don't need this anymore. So now they have it, now everything they touch turns to gold. Or at least it seems that way. So that was the story of the touchstone. So Chintamani means you can think and pray to that tree in Vrindavan, or the ground, or the Kamadhenu, and it will give. Oh, yeah. This is just like in the Middle Ages in Europe, there were so many alchemists, and they were trying to produce gold by combining different chemicals, copper and mercury and all different kinds of things. But they weren't successful. So chinta means mind, and it's a thought gem which yields and fulfills all one's desires. In Vrindavan, the chintamani is used for building homes. The pebbles, or the chintamani stones, are used for walkways and footpaths and to make toe rings for the gopis. The only desire within the heart of all the Brijvasis is one, to be with Krishna, to associate with him, serve him, and love him. No one has any second desire. Therefore, chintamani, they don't approach chintamani with any other desire. They just use chintamani gems for building materials and ornaments. And Brihad Bhagavatamrita Sanatana Goswami says that the residents of Vrindavan, they never think of using chintamani any other way but for the service of Krishna. The dust of Vrindavan, which is also chintamani, is so special and sacred. That's why Akrura glorifies the Brajaraj in Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 38, verse 25 and 6. There's two nice verses there. And also there's some glorification in Rajaviti Chintamani by Vishnu Chakravarti Pada about the dust of Vrindavan, which this is also Chintamani Raj. Raja Raj is also Chintamani. We're walking on Chintamani. And we're living on it. So fortunate. So there's one quote here from Vrindavan Mahimamrita by Prabhupada Saraswati. He says, in some places the ground of Braj is made of camphor dust. In some places it's made of saffron. In some places ground musk. And in some places it's made of the aromatic substances used in religious ceremonies. So I'll just read a little bit about the dust of Vrindavan, which is also chintamani. It can fulfill all our desires. And just like the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees, Bhaktapada Duli, Bhaktapada Jal, Bhakta Uchishta. These three things are explained by Krishna's Kaviraj and Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antilila, that if you contact these things, they have incredible spiritual power to elevate the consciousness, purify the heart, and make bhakti flow in the heart. The water from the feet of the devotees, washing the feet, and the dust from their feet, bhaktapada duli, and also the uchishta, the remnants of their food substances. So maybe I told before, but at Radharaman temple, they sweep the temple, Radharamanji, and they collect it, and when you walk in the first door into the temple, there's a little niche. I think they say niche. Little niche in the wall, little like hole in the wall type, little shelf. And they collect the dust after they sweep the temple and they pour it there. That's called Bhaktapada Duli. That's the dust from the feet of the devotees. And there's some sign in Bengali or something that says, you know, free, help yourself or something. Or, you know, take some, it's good for you. Or free dust, help yourself. At any rate, and then what the devotees do before they go in there, they put their hands there and they just like we put chandan on their heads, so they decorate their foreheads with the Bhaktapada Duli. So their by contacting that Chintamani dust, their desire to really see Radharaman, and their desire to really receive the sidelong glance of Radharaman, and their desire to really have a special reciprocation of mercy from Radharaman will be fulfilled. That's their desire, that they will attain a loving glance of Radharaman. So they're trying to prepare themselves by developing the proper adhikar and purity of mind and heart, by wearing and adorning their forehead with the dust from the feet of the Radharaman's devotees, which is gracing the floor of the temple. And it's so that's a very wonderful arrangement that the Sevites have made there for all the visitors. You know? Everyone knows that? So let's hear a little bit about the dust. Sometimes you see little kids throwing it on each other. This is from Bhagavatam 10:68-37, the verse. Oh, yeah. The dust of Krishna's lotus feet, which is the source of purity for all places of pilgrimage, is worshipped by all the great demigods. The principal deities of all planets are engaged in his service. His meaning God, Krishna. And they consider themselves most fortunate to take the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna on their crowns. This is 10:30-29, verse purport. This is the gopis talking each other. Oh, girls, the dust of Govinda's lotus feet is so sacred that even Brahma, Shiva, and Lakshmi take that dust upon their heads to dispel sinful reactions. That's the end of the quote. Then it's purport. According to Vishnu Chakravartipad, each day in the late afternoon, between 3:36 and 4, 3:36 and 6, which means right now, when Krishna returns from the pasture grounds with all the cows and gopas, the great demigods like Brahma and Shiva would come down to Vrindavan and they would take the dust of Krishna's feet on their heads. Brahma prays, chapter 14, Krishna book. My dear Lord Krishna, please give me any sort of birth within Braj so that I may be favored by the dust of the feet of some of the devotees of Vrindavan. In Vrindavan Mahamarmita, there's a little section here. Well, this is just some writing from the author. Not only the demigods, but even Lord Sri Krishna's eternal associates, such as Srimati Radharani, the gopis, Lakshmiji, and intimate devotees like Uddhava and Narad, relish the dust of Vrindavan. Quotation from Prabhudananda Saraswati. When overcome by Vrindavan's nectar beauty and happily covering her limbs with its dust, when will dear Radharani, her large lotus petal eyes rolling in ecstasy, shine in great wonder? So Radharani also decorates her body with the dust. This is from chapter 46, Krishna book. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji, she always desired to keep the dust of Vrindavan on her breast, along with the fragrant saffron. The gopis, and especially the coward men, and the aborigine tribe women, that's the Pulindas, they always desire to become grass and straw on the street of Vrindavan, to be trampled by Krishna's lotus feet. This is from Lalita Madhav. In Vrindavan forest, the best place is along the shore of the Yamuna, Yamuna Pulin. On the sand of the Yamuna, the best place is the area of the Rasa Dance, the Rasasthali, at Vamshivad. The Rasa Dance arena is filled with dust that touched the feet of Krishna, the lover of the gopis. The great sage Narada worships those particles of dust with all his heart. This is a conversation, 1975. It's from a tape, number 89. Prabhupada's in Hyderabad. And he asks Amahamsa Swami and some other devotees, Yashodanandan, so why is the dust of Vrindavan worshipable? And then Prabhupada answered his own question. That's the way it is a lot of times. Because Vrindavan dust is not different from Krishna. When you take, this is Prabhupada speaking, when you take a little dust from Vrindavan Dham, it means you are taking the dust from Krishna's lotus feet. Then the author writes this little thing here. Devotees living in Vrindavan regularly eat a few grains of the transcendental dust whenever they visit Krishna's pastime places such as Sevakunj, Govardhan Hill, Barsana, Radhakunda, and Ramanreti. Some Brijvasis even carry a small bottle of Vrindavan dust whenever they leave the Dham. They add a sprinkle to their meals in order to maintain an intimate contact with Radha Govinda and Sri Vrindavan Dham. Biographers recount that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself regularly ate a few grains of dust that he had collected from the birthplace of his spiritual master, Sri Ishwarapuri. So I've seen that with my eyes. I've gone to Delhi and spent 2 days with a few Brijvasis, and they had a little 35mm film canister and had some dust. And I asked them, where is this dust from? I said, this is dust from Nidiban. I said, why do you have dust from there? He said, because we worship Bunky Bihari. Because we worship Bunky Bihari, and Bunky Bihari manifested there in Nidiban. That was where his first temple was, and that's where Haridas Swami used to do his bhajan. And so, and then they put a little bit in the dal and different things that they were eating in Punjabi Bagh where they were staying. And I asked them why, and they said, because this food here in Vrindavan, all the prasadam, all the bogas cooked by Radharani, and so automatically has the dust of Vrindavan in it. But if you eat food outside of Vrindavan, you will lose your Braj Bhav. Your Braj Bhav will evaporate from your consciousness. This is their Bhav also. This view. It's not that, you know, some acharya goes overseas and travels and preaches and eats, you know, some food over there without sprinkling it with the dust, he'll come back, he'll lose his Bhav, come back to Mathura or something and have no more Bhav. It's not exactly like that, but these particular devotees, these Brijvasis, were just, they were Goswamis, you know, married people, Brahmins, Goswamis. They had that bhav, that particular emotional attachment to Braj and feeling, and they believed that for themselves and their family members, that, you know, we want to, this dust of Vrindavan is full of, is Radha Bhav and Krishna Bhav, is full of Madhurya Bhav. And we want that, and we want to stay in touch with that. So we want to have a little Vrindavan inside of us every day. So I really appreciate that. It's like I know one devotee, a godbrother named Padma Lochan, and for a few years he read in the Padma Puran a chapter on Tulsi and Mahatmyam. And in there it has all the glories of Tulsi leaves and roots and dust and dirt and all these things. There's a whole little section here about the dust of Vrindavan. When Prabhupada was in Hyderabad, he said, how is it that the dust of Vrindavan is personal, individual, living entities? Then Prabhupada, he defined the dust of Vrindavan by contrasting it. That's also a way of definition. Contrasting, comparing and contrasting one object with a similar object. So he said, this is 1975, tape 38. He said, if you want something from this dust in Hyderabad, said Prabhupada, you can't get it because this dust is material. But in Vrindavan, even from the dust, if you want anything, it will be delivered immediately. Nice, huh? So you can follow this teaching of Akura. If you intend to visit Vrindavan, then you should follow the ideal steps of Akrura and always think of the pastimes and activities of the Lord. And as soon as you reach the boundary of Vrindavan, you should jump out of your Maruti, or your ambassador, or your sumo, or your chariot. If you're a Krur, you're in a chariot. And jump out and immediately smear the dust of Vrindavan over your body without thinking of your material position and your prestige. Actually, one cannot go to Vrindavan by purchasing a ticket. The process of going to Vrindavan is shown by a Krura. Now you can consider this quotation from Vrindavana Mahimamrita. If you roll about in the ground, on the ground of Vrindavan, then you will attain an exalted position like that beautiful pearl necklace strung by Krishna and worn by Radha. This exalted fate will not be difficult for you to attain. You can become a pearl necklace. You can become a pearl on a necklace that Krishna strings for Radharani. And of course, let us not forget the famous shloka by Lord Chaitanya. Ai nanda tanaja kintkaram patitam vam vishameva vambado kripya tava parapankaja stita duli sadrisham vichintya. O son of Maharaj Nanda Krishna, I am your eternal kinkari. Kinkari means manjari. Manjari means servant. Kinkari is feminine. Yet because of my own fruitive activities, I have fallen into this terrible ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from this ocean of death and keep me as a particle of dust at your lotus feet. Stita duli sadrisham vichintya. So there's the dust. That all comes under the category of Chintamani. Seeing the Chintamani Dhamma Vrindavan means having the eyes of love. We must deepen our devotion by regularly hearing about the glories of Brajabhumi Vrindavan. Then we will come to appreciate and start rolling in the dust. And we will wear the dust on our foreheads. And we will eat and glorify the Chintamani dust of Brajadam. Any questions about the dust? We kind of take it for granted. We walk on it and we live on it. But do we worship it or do we honor it? When you do parikrama, when you're doing Dandabati Parikrama Vrindavan, or Barsana, or Nandagram, or Govardhan, or if you're a little bit cool-headed, before you do Vrindavan Parikrama, even Parikrama, not what to speak of Dandabat Parikrama, but before you do Dandabat Parikrama, according to the rules of Shastra, because we at one time did that service by the grace of Guru, you're supposed to offer arti. When you go out every morning, you go out with agarbati, deepam, pushpam, incense, e-lamp and flower, and you offer arti to the land, to the bhumi, Brajabhumi, Chintamani. Then you offer arti, you can put the incense there, then you start your parikrama, either walking parikrama or dandavat parikrama. And this is the proper way to worship the Dham. That's one way. And by serving the Dham, doing Jaro Seva, who is the great devotee who worshipped the dust of Vrindavan by doing Jaro Seva, brooming? Shamananda, remember Shamananda, who discovered Radhashyama Sundar, and he was given a special tilak by Radharani, and initiated into his Manjari Sarup, personally revealed by Srimati Radharani. So he was serving the Dham, because it's explained in Hari Bhakti Vilas, which quotes different Puranas, that different articles are purified in different ways. Cotton is purified by washing in water and hanging on the line in the sun and wind to purify it. And conch shell is purified if it had come in contact with stool or something. Conch shell is purified by being buried in the ground for 7 days. You know, washing it off and then burying it in the ground. And silk is purified by being exposed to the sun rays or moon rays. And wool is purified by being exposed to the sun rays. And the ground, the earth or the ground, is purified by sweeping. By sweeping. Sweeping means jaru seva. You know, jaru seva. Brooming, we say. Brooming or sweeping. Take, you know, chup. So generally in the Vedic days or in the culture days before sunrise, the lady of the house, that's usually the way it is, or was, she goes out before sunrise and she sweeps all around the courtyard in front of her house, just sweeps the dirt, and that actually purifies. That purifies her courtyard where she lives and purifies that area just by sweeping. That's the shastras. Then she'll take some rice flour and make some auspicious mandalas and designs. And so when Suryadev rises and shines upon her household and her grounds, he will be very happy to see that. They say that if the Suryadev sees a woman with a broom, she shortens her lifespan by 10 years. So nowadays most people get up about 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock in the morning and start doing their sweeping. So they're not doing anything for their lifespan. But the main point is to appreciate that we're living in this dust, we're breathing the dust. And another interesting thing is how we so easily tend to make offenses. Like we're somehow, sometimes in our very short and limited, inauspicious lifespan, we have the auspicious opportunity to walk behind cows. And the cows are kicking up the dust. And that's such an auspicious snan, gocharan snan. It's so auspicious and so purifying and enervating that Shiva, Brahma, Indra, Surya, Chandra, Agni, etc., they come down from their holy abodes, they come down here to Brajabhumi specifically to walk behind the cows when Krishna's walking behind the cows to bathe in that dust. Any questions about the dust? It's what the Shastras say.
No matter where.
No matter where or when. But generally, you won't find too many gamblers with Tulsi leaves in their mouths. You won't find too many womanizers and playboys. You know, usually you'll only find a very pious and religious and pure-hearted person with such a thing. So at least if you don't keep it in your mouth, it might be good to keep a little, you know, like these dogs used to keep a little thing under their neck of whiskey or something. keep a little few Tulsi leaves in your, you know, pocketbook or something, you know. Yeah, it's all there. See, the Mahatmyam, it's glorifying the leaves, glorifies the neck, the bead, the wood, it glorifies chandan. You know, the best chandan you can make, the most pleasing incense to Krishna is incense of tulsi wood. You burn tulsi wood. It doesn't burn very well. But you burn tulsi wood, that's better than, you know, Golok Dham and Sugandhi Lok and, you know, you know, whatever kind of thing you're going to offer to Krishna, 500 rupees a kilo or whatever, you just burn some tulsi. It's the most pleasing incense aroma is tulsi stick. And for us, we can't even smell it practically because it's really transcendental. And the most pleasing kind of chandan is you take tulsi, dried of course, tulsi wood, and you grind it on a stone with a little water and you decorate Krishna's head with it. He likes that a million times more than sandalwood. That takes a lot of trouble, and you know we're usually pretty lazy. So there's the glorification. It glorifies the leaves. So this verse is the glorification of leaves. But then you read the glorification of the Buddha. It says anyone who's wearing tulsi at the time of death will get, you know. So it's the in other words, they're all equal. And if there's the body's being burned, if someone's body's being burned, and then at the time during the cremation, if someone comes and throws tulsi wood on the body, then that's guaranteed liberation for that person. So, in other words, tulsi is not small time. It's big time. Big power. Big mercy in tulsi. I guess tomorrow we'll discuss a little bit about, I think I mentioned, maybe we'll go on to almost on to 30, a little bit about Kamadhenus, and then we'll go on to 30. Lakshmis and Kamadhenus, and then we'll discuss verse 30 tomorrow on Thursday. Maybe 31, hopefully. Anything else in the last minute or two? And I heard the first three quarters. You said in the Dham that we have the experience, you have the experience that material desires seem to be more empowered or more forceful to... Anyway, sometimes any place, material desire, not only in the Dham, wherever you happen to be living, material desires, you know, come into your mind.
Well,
they don't really enter your mind, they're already there. They forcefully present themselves. Ta-da! Here I am! Deal with me, man! Check it out! Hey, where'd you come from? Hey, who let you in? I've already been here. But I just decided to manifest myself. Now, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to serve me? Surrender to me? Hey, get the hell out of here, you dirty dog! Hare Krishna! Jao! Big Jao! Right? Or you might say, yeah, welcome in, welcome. How may I serve you? Yeah, no. Desires come, and that's all what Anartha Nivritti is about. It's like, you know, is purifying and eliminating those desires by the fire of bhakti. And that's explained also, we'll come to that verse, how by bhakti itself purifies and eliminates those desires. But those are just our prarabdha karma that are manifesting themselves and fructifying at particular times according to their own predestined their time. They have their time to come. There's a time for suffering and sadness, and there's a time for happiness and promotion. And that's all determined by what you did in your last life. So all those seeds, Punya Bij and Papa Bij, have their time settings. Some come at 25, some come at 15, 19, 29 and a half, and they have their own time, and they will come. And as you do bhakti, they start to diminish, and so then they're eliminated and fried out, and they don't manifest and reveal themselves. And you become totally pure, and you don't experience any of those. So that's going to come, and then you deal with those by the sadhu sangha and sadhana kriya, I mean bhajana kriya, sadhana, and then they're controlled and purified and ultimately eliminated, and you stay on the path of bhakti without succumbing to them and being defeated by them by the grace of Guru and Krishna. But now the other side is that there's your what you're desiring now. Those are desires from last life and this life and before bhakti. But now what are you desiring right now, today, that you're walking in Vrindavan and thinking and desiring Vrindavan? You're thinking and feeling and willing. Your mind is active today and creating reactions for tomorrow. I want this one. I need this one. I must have this one. Oh, please give me this one. Then the trees will say, you stupid. Okay, haribo, take it. But that's generally not the response of a sincere devotee to the fructification of his prarabdha karma. Usually he takes to the task and he deals with those desires in the proper way as a warrior on the field of sadhana. A warrior on the field of sadhana, right? Becoming a devotee means declaring a war against the illusory energy. Where's the illusory energy? Right there. Got your own little six and three quarters inches of it, or five, you know, seven and a half, or whatever you got over around there, you know, whatever your head is, your head space. So that you have a little war going on in there, and just, you know, be victorious like Arjuna. Armed with yoga, stand and fight. Armed with bhakti, stand and fight. Drink deeply from the fountain of bhakti, and you'll inundate and drown all those desires. A field covered by water cannot sprout. So the karmic field is lying in your heart. If you drown it with the waters of bhakti, if you're always submerged in the bhakti rasamrita sindhu, then there's no chance for that field to produce any grains. A flooded field will not grow anything. So flood the khetra, the karmic khetra. There's a karmic khetra in your heart, a field of karma. Papa karma, punya karma, in the heart of every jiva. So you flood it with bhakti, more bhakti, more bhakti, more bhakti. Prema kata, lila kata, rasa kata, prem nam. And then you'll just be gopi bhava risamritam dilahari kalola magno muhur. You'll be rising and diving in the ocean of gopi bhav. Vanchakapa truvyascha kripasudhaya vichapudanam.